think I don't think I ever really thought about that word relationship until I moved to Africa. And we went over there to work with students at the University of East Africa in Kenya. And this was back in 1967, the very last day of 1967 we arrived there. And after I had lived there for a few years, I began to realize that, well, not even that long, I began to realize that I didn't know a lot about relationships. And I really feel like after living overseas for 5.5 years, that there's a lot that we as Americans don't know about relationships. And we tend to get so caught up in productiveness. You know, we want to get our feelings, like Sandra says, of security from things other than God and other than just relationships. And I think after living in Kenya, I began to realize how much those people over there gave to me. And I think I went there thinking that I had some things to give to them. And after I'd lived there for a while, I thought, I have a lot of things to learn from them. And one of the biggest things that I learned from our 5.5 years over there was how valuable relationships are. And I began to change my whole perspective on that. And then as I thought about the Gospels, as I thought about Jesus' time here on this earth, I realized that Jesus knew how important relationship was. And as you read through the Gospels, you see that. You see how valuable relationship is. And that you really don't have a whole lot to give to people unless there is a relationship there. Because the first thing that people are going to look at is you. And they're going to size you up. And depending on how you come across to people, whether they feel loved and accepted around you, and they feel the warmth of love coming from you, they're not going to be very interested in what you think or have to say if the wrong vibes are coming through to them. So relationship is very, very important. And I'll always be so grateful for what I learned from the Africans on that. And then coming back to the States with a different perspective. And now we're working, my husband and I are working with international students at Oklahoma University. And once again, I find myself just seeing this again, how much I am learning from these Chinese students just in the area of relationship. And it's very meaningful to me. I love it. I love what I can learn from them and what they're teaching me. Well, I was thinking about this word relationship, and I looked it up in the dictionary, and of course there's more than one definition. Every time you look a word up in the dictionary, they've got all this list of definitions, and so you kind of go for the one that says what you want it to say. But one of them was that relationship is the connecting of two or more people or things into a close association. Now, of course, relationship can be, if it's a bad relationship, then the association is not close. It's going to be distant. So there's different kinds of relationships. But today we're talking about healthy ones. We're talking about close relationships. So we'll just be thinking along that line. And, you know, as I thought about the subject of relationships, I thought in my own life, I don't know about you, but in my own life, it seems like the most valuable relationships that I've had over the years are often the ones that have been tested. Have you found that in your own life? Were you with a person, you've gone through something hard with them? Maybe a difficulty, a misunderstanding, something really difficult that you've gone through. And then after that, after you're through that experience, somehow your relationship with that person is just on a different level than it ever was before. How many of you have ever, do you know what I'm talking about? How many of you have found that? Even in marriage, I know when Jim and I were first married, I just thought our relationship was going to be great. And it's been a good relationship, but boy, it's been tested. Because two very different people came together. And when you're in a dating relationship, Your best foot is forward. You know, you're there, you're making a good impression. And then once you get into the marriage relationship, you begin to realize how different your backgrounds are that you've come from. And I came from a background where I was not at all time conscious. You know, our philosophy at home is, well, when we get hungry, we start thinking of dinner. We don't think about it the day before or planning our menu ahead, any of that sort of thing. It was just when people would get hungry, Mother would say, well, we better think about dinner. So we'd go in the kitchen and she'd say, well, I don't see anything here. We better go to the store. So we'd go to the store and we'd go down the aisle with our cart and she'd say, well, this looks good. Let's try this. And there wasn't a list, all these things. And that was fine. It worked great in our family. But then I married Jim and everything was, you write it down and you have a certain time and you have a place for everything and everything in its place. And boy, I tell you that, we had some adjustments to each other. And he could not believe that it was possible for anyone to be as untime conscious as I was. And I would look at him, and I could not believe anyone could be as rigid as he was. So we were just... But I think when God puts us in those relationships, it's really a blessing in disguise, because he often puts us with someone very different than we are in order to balance us. If we... we're in a living situation, whether it's a roommate or a husband, whatever, who's always just like we are, then we're never forced to change, are we? And we can become very intolerant of anyone who's not like us. But when we're in a situation that's a little bit uncomfortable, a little off balance, I think God wants to use it in our lives if we won't run out from under it. If we'll stay there and let him do what he wants to do, he wants to broaden us. He wants us to learn to live harmoniously with many different kinds of people. People very different than we are. That's how we learn to be tolerant. That's how we learn what real love is all about. Love is not always being comfortable. And love isn't having everything just flow smoothly, but it's the bumps and the scratches and these other things where we learn to be forgiving and we learn to give way for the other person and to be put at a disadvantage ourselves at times and to not always have things the way we want. And to me, that's what relationship is all about. And I think that's the way God meant it to be. And he gives relationships that are comfortable too. He gives us some of both. But he loves us too much to allow us to always be in a situation where we're comfortable. He has an interesting way of coming into our lives and throwing things off balance. And he does it in love. He doesn't do it to make us uncomfortable, but he does it because he cares so much about how we turn out. And he wants so badly for us to begin to look more and more like him as we go through life. And we want, in theory, to look like Jesus, don't we? I mean, I want to be a Christ-like person, you do. But boy, when God puts us to the test, we can really squirm. And we can just say, well, Lord, I didn't mean this. You know, why can't you just do it in my life? Just do it. I don't want to be put through this test tube of experience, but there's no other way. I think relationships are forged in, that's another word I looked up in the dictionary, and it says to forge is to put under intense heat. Well, heat's never comfortable, is it? Never feels good. To hammer or beat into shape. And then it used the example of pig iron being made into wrought iron. And, you know, I had to laugh when I saw that word pig iron. I thought, oh, boy, I've seen that in my life. And God's trying to make me into wrought iron. He's trying to make me into something that is practical and usable and to have a certain beauty there in my life that makes me of more value to him and to people around me. And I was reminded of experience I had in Africa with one of the other wives who came over there. She and her husband came over to work with Jim and me in the university ministry there. And their names are Dave and Sherry Hall, and they are back from Africa now after being over there 17 years, and they're working at the University of Minnesota with African students. But when they first came over, I remember they'd been there about a year, and Sherry and I had a misunderstanding on something, and I felt very misunderstood by her. I mean, it hurt. And I remember at the time praying and saying, Lord, I don't know how we're ever going to get this situation resolved because she's seeing it this way and I'm seeing it this way, and it's just not working. And I was very discouraged, but I remember saying, Lord, as I pray this way, I don't even have the faith to believe you're going to answer. I'll just be honest with you, Lord. I'm praying the words. They're coming out of my mouth. But I just don't even see how you're ever going to answer this prayer. But I'm going to just say the words. So I said, Lord, when someday when this is resolved, this problem, will you please let Sherry and me be closer than we ever would have been if it had not happened? And even as I prayed that, I just thought, fat chance of that ever happening. I didn't have very much faith. But you know something? God did exactly that. And in time, we got that resolved, and it had an interesting effect on our relationship. We were closer than we'd ever been before. We went through something hard, and the relationship was tested, but because we were both praying and coming to God and praying, God came to our aid, and he brought that back together again. And it's a beautiful relationship. I just dearly love that girl, and she loves me. We get on the phone every once in a while and talk together, and there's an understanding there. We give each other the benefit of the doubt. We don't feel we have to prove anything with each other. We don't feel we're walking on eggs in our relationship. But there's a comfortableness there, and I love those kind of relationships. I have that kind, I feel, with Sandra. And I feel like if there is anything that is not right in our relationship, I feel like she would come to me and that I would go to her. In fact, Sandra has come to me a few times, and I thought later, isn't that great? You know, she is comfortable enough with me that she'll come and ask me, you know, Jerry, is everything okay, or was this a problem? And we can just be honest with each other. And one day we... In fact, I'd had lunch with her a few months ago, and she was expressing her view on something, and I was kind of insensitive in the way I answered her, and I kind of countered it with another viewpoint. And after I left that day, God brought it to my mind, and I kind of brushed it off. I thought, oh, it's nothing. And, you know, that week, God brought it to my mind three or four times. He just kept bringing it back, and I finally began to get the point, and I thought, this must be God bringing this to my attention. And so the next time I saw her, I asked her if that had bothered her the way I answered. And she said, smiled, and she said, yes. I said, did you feel put down? She said, yes. And you know, I was able to apologize to her. And we hugged and went on talking and laughing, and everything was fine. And I thought, you know, isn't it wonderful? God meant for us to be open and honest with each other and to be able to come and say, hey, you know, I'm sorry, I was wrong, and I offended you. I know I did, and please forgive me. But if we can't do that, then there's always that weirdness when we are around the other person, that strained feeling, and it's not right. And I don't think that's pleasing to God. God's only put us here for a short time in this world, and it's so important to take advantage of that time. And believe me, when you're my age, and I'm a lot older than the rest of you here, but when you're my age, you will look back over the years and you'll think, oh, they just went like that. And yet, when I was 20, I just thought I had forever. But now that I look back, I think, boy, that went fast. And it does. We're only here in this world for a short time, and relationships are so important. And we need to let God work in this area of our lives. There's some reasons why I think good relationships are a must for the Christian woman. And I'll mention about five of these. Did you get those handouts, by
yes,
the way?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Peggy. But the first one is that relationships are important for the Christian woman because love for my sister in Christ is proof of my love for God. And in John, 1 John 4:20, well, I came up with everything but my Bible. In 1 John 4:20, and I want to read this because I like the way that it puts this. It says, if anyone says, I love God, and yet hates his brother, he is a liar. For anyone who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. And you know, I thought about that, and I thought, even in science, scientists go from the known to the unknown. And so God is saying here, he's saying that even, well, John that wrote this book is saying that You can't love someone you have not seen. You can't go from the unknown to the known. You have to go from the known to the unknown. And if you can't even love this person that God has put in your life, then don't go around saying that you love God, because it just doesn't work that way. God has given you, He has put someone in your life that is one of His children whom He loves. And if you cannot love someone that He loves, then don't say you love God. So it's a proof of whether we really love God or not. And I remember hearing a story once about a little girl who was sitting in her father's lap, and her brother had just been punished. So he was sitting in a corner. His mother made him sit in the corner on a stool for punishment. And so she crawled up in her dad's lap, and she had her arms around her father, and she was hugging her daddy like that. And the little brother was in the corner, and she was going... And her mother saw her from the kitchen. And she came out, and she took the little girl out of her dad's lap, and she says, "No." She says, "You can't be hugging on your father and sticking your tongue out at your brother at the same time." And I thought, that's what we do, though, sometimes, isn't it? We say, "Oh, I love God," and we're hugging God, but we're sticking our tongue out at our sister. And God comes and says, "No, you can't do that. It doesn't work that way." And then good relationships are also a proof of my claim to be a Christian. And in John 13:34 and 35, it says, "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. Just like I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." And there are three things in this verse that come to our attention. The first thing is that there's a command there. It says, "A new commandment I give you, that you love one another." This is not optional. This is not a suggestion. It's a command. I'm commanding you to love one another. And then there's a comparison. He goes on to say, "As I have loved you, in the same way that I have loved you, that you're to love one another." Well, how is that? How does Jesus love me? He loves me with an unconditional kind of love, with a no-strings-attached kind of love. And He's going to love me whether I throw a temper tantrum or not. He's going to love me whether I return His love or not. And He says, "You're to love others this way. And by the way, I'll give you the power to do it if you'll let me. I'm not asking you to go out and do this in your own strength. But this is the way I want you to love, is with my kind of love." And then there's the cause and effect there, because He says, "This is how other people are going to know that I'm real in your life, is if you have love for one another." So this is the cause and effect. So it is a proof of what really is there in my life. And then it's necessary for the spreading of the gospel. In order for people to really see a difference between us and them, there's got to be something in our life that's different enough to get their attention. And in Philippians 1:27, says, "Whatever happens, conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ." So if you call yourself a Christian, remember you're being watched, and conduct yourselves accordingly in a manner that's worthy of Christ. And then you skip on down to the end of verse 28, and it says, "This is a sign to people who are not Christians." This is the evidence to them of what a Christian really is. Have you ever reacted to somebody and then you think, I wonder if I could witness to them now. I wonder if I could talk to them about Christ. And you know you can't. You've just blown your opportunity. And I remember doing that once. Somebody got ahead of me, and they were in their car. I was in my car. And they blocked my way while they went into a building to get something. And I had to sit there and wait until they came out. And then I remember how angry I was in my spirit. And I, when I had a chance, I just took my car and I just whipped around them as if to say, you know, how dare you do that? And then I thought as I drove away, I thought, what? You know, it maybe made me feel good right at the moment, but then I felt worse. I felt terrible, and I thought, I wonder if I could go back and tell that person about the love of God. And I realized I couldn't. I would have nothing to say. So to remember that people are looking at us, and if we say we're a Christian, they're going to be sizing that up in their minds. And then good relationships are important because I need all of the body. I don't need just people who see things exactly the way I do. I don't need people who think exactly like I think. I need the whole body. I need people different from me. And I need to appreciate the differences in other people. And as much as I can, I need to live peacefully with those around me. As much as it's my responsibility to, then I need to do that. And 1 Corinthians 12, 20-23, it's just the neatest passage on this. I love this passage. And this is the part, you're all familiar with it, but starting really with verse 21, it says, the eye cannot say to the hand, I don't need you. And then we skip down. Those parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. And the parts that we think are less honorable, we treat with special honor. And God has helped me with this over the years because I know that without the Lord, I would be a very critical person. I just tend toward that. I have a way of, I can walk into a situation and I can see things wrong with it. I can see things wrong with people. And God has just has allowed some things over the years to produce some breaking in my life that's been very good for me. And I feel like I'm more able now, at least more able than I was, to see other people and to, when I'm around people, to think, Lord, what does this person need and how can I help show your love for this person? How can I reach out to them and share your love with this person? And boy, it makes a difference in how you are around other people. You see it as an opportunity to share love rather than to pick them apart in your mind and find the things that are wrong. And that comes from seeing a need for other people, needing all of the body. You know, I need this person, and I may be strong in this area, and they may be weak in this area where I'm strong, but I'll bet you if I look, I can find an area in their life where I'm weak and they're strong, and I can learn from that area. And then the fifth thing is that it's necessary for inner peace. Good relationships are necessary for the inner peace, and we all want peace, don't we? We want that the peace of Christ to rule in us. Philippians 4, 6 and 7. Says, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and petition. That little funny little word means asking. By prayer and just asking. With thanksgiving, with a thankful spirit, present your requests to God. And it goes on to say that the peace of God will guard your hearts and your minds. His peace will guard your hearts and your minds from unhealthy thoughts, from unhealthy reactions, unhealthy emotions. That by coming to God with our requests. You know, I found in my own life that when I chew on another person mentally, that there is a real lack of peace there, and there's a spirit of irritation. And anyone that's around me at that point is not going to be very strengthened or very lifted by being around me. And I had a chance to see this really happen about a month ago. I was out doing our fast walk exercise that my husband and I do a couple times a week. And we were walking down a very wide street in Norman, plenty of room. It was early in the morning. There weren't other cars around. And this man in a pickup truck was coming toward us, and we were right over to the edge, right by the curb, so we weren't in his way. He had plenty of room. And he saw us, and he was irritated that we were walking in the street instead of up on the sidewalk. So he just laid on his horn about half a block before he got to where we were, and he got right down as close as he could to the curb to where we had to jump to get out of his way up on the sidewalk. And then he went on by. And it made me so angry. I stood there and I thought, that old goat. I was just so mad at him. And I was amazed at Jim's response. Jim said, oh, bless his heart, you know, he's probably got a lot of problems. And I said, well, he is a problem. Only got him, he is. And I just kind of fumed for about 5 minutes. We were walking down the street and Jim wasn't saying anything. And I was just kind of, I was chewing on him. And I just, you know, I made statements like, boy, am I glad I'm not his wife. I'd sure he could be married to him. And I was just going on and on. And Jim says, well, he says, you know, it won't do you any good to do that, honey. He says, it's just making you more and more angry. He says, why don't you just forgive him? And I says, well, he doesn't deserve to be forgiven. And Jim says, well, none of us do. And I got to thinking about it. I thought, that's exactly right. None of us really deserve the forgiveness that God's given to us. But I couldn't help but notice that my anger did not hurt that man, but it hurt me. I was the one that was suffering from that, not him. He'd driven on. He'd made his point, and he was gone. But I was the one that was suffering from that. And so I didn't have that peace of Christ that Philippians talks about until I stopped and asked God to forgive me. And you know, everything in us resists that, doesn't it? We don't want to do that because we are right. And why should we humble ourselves when we know we're right? This is how we think. And it's almost like God stands there and just folds his arms and says, well, when you're ready to obey, I'm here. You know, I'm here with my peace, but you're not going to get it till you obey. And so we have to decide what we're going to do about that. Then those are some reasons why relationships are important. Just that it's a proof of our love for God. It's a proof that we're really a Christian. It's necessary if we're going to be a witness in this world. And it's necessary because the facts are we do need all of the body. We do need other Christians. And then it's necessary if we're going to experience that inner peace within us. Well, then how do you go about actually building a good relationship with someone? Sometimes it just happens, but I think, as we were mentioning before, that the best relationships are often the tested ones. And for us to just think that good relationships are merely going to happen is not a very realistic way to think. But you can expect a relationship that goes deep to be one that is tested in one way or another. And there are some steps to this, though, some things that we can keep in mind that I think will help us in building good relationships with other people. And one of those is to be willing to serve the other person, whether or not there's a change in that person. In other words, we don't stand back and say, well, you know, I could like her if, if she'd not be so abrasive, or if she would change in this area or that, then, you know, I think we could have a good relationship. But to be willing to see a way to serve that person, whether they ever change or not. This is a test for wives that are in difficult marriages. You know, am I going to love that man for Jesus' sake, whether he changes or not? Or am I going to love him conditionally, and I will meet needs in his life, and I'll reach out to him if he will change in this way or that? And God says, that's not my kind of love. I love unconditionally. And I have the power to help you love that way if you'll let me love through you. So being willing to serve with or without change. And I think too often we use people to meet a personality need in our own lives. And there's a self-centeredness there. We're in a sense manipulating people, and we're being conditional in our relationship to them. And you're tested many times through life on this one. For example, with children. I know when all of our children went through their teens, there were times that I felt like the maid of the family. And I thought, well, the only reason I'm here is to put on meals and do laundry. I'm just not appreciated. And I didn't like that, and I didn't feel good. But, you know, I'd have to, God would eventually get my attention when I'd get in one of those moods, and he'd finally get through to me. And he'd say things to me like, well, can you do this just for my sake? Can you reach out to this person just with the love of Christ? Just because I love you that way, can you reach out and love this person for no other reason than just for my sake? And I had to decide whether or not I would do that for Jesus' sake, whether I would let that be enough. Then another thing, another step, is being vulnerable with people. In order to have a good relationship, I think there has to be a certain amount of vulnerability in our relating to one another. There has to be a willingness to admit when we're wrong. Or, even if we don't think we're wrong, when another person reacts to us in some way, or they bring something to our attention, even to be willing to say, well, I'm not sure, you know, I don't see this clearly yet, but I'll sure think about it and pray about it, and maybe I'm wrong and I just don't see it, but I'll be willing to think about that. And just an openness there to the fact that there is a possibility we could be wrong. And it's amazing how, when you get honest with other people and honest with yourself, how often God will bring something clearly to your attention. I remember one day Jim and I were out doing our exercise, and he mentioned something, and I disagreed with him on it. And then he came back with his point of view again, and then I disagreed again, and I was getting a little bit hostile in my attitude. And finally, he just stopped talking. He just got quiet. And I was kind of, I was standing there praying for him. Wasn't that a wonderful thing to do? I was praying that God would change him. And I was saying things like, Lord, you know, he's really got a blind spot there, and you need to work on Jim. You need to change him in that area, because he's really being pushy, and he's just trying to make me think like he thinks, and that's not right. And I was just going on and on. And I began to get this feeling that I wasn't being heard. Have you ever talked to somebody and you kind of get the feeling they're not listening, they're looking off here or there, and you're just talking to a wall? I began to feel that way about the Lord. I began to feel like he wasn't listening to me. And so I finally, as we were walking along in silence, I finally said to the Lord, well, Lord, I don't think I'm wrong, but if I'm at all wrong in this conversation, will you show me that I am? Because I really do want your will. Well, I didn't think I was. I thought it was all Jim. But as soon as I prayed that way, God immediately brought a verse to my mind. By the way, here's a little plug for Scripture memory. If you have never seriously memorized Scripture, you really ought to do that. It's one of the best things I've ever done in my life. That has helped me probably more than anything, because it gives God a chance to bring something to your mind right in a situation when you need it the most. And the verse that God brought to my mind was the end of John in chapter 21, verse 23. And a situation where Peter was concerned about John always hanging around Jesus. There was a little jealousy there, I think. And here he was finally getting to talk to Jesus. And here was this guy, John, standing over there. And he was just probably thinking, well, you know, why can't he just get lost? And he turned to Jesus and he said, Lord, what about this man? And what Jesus said to him, in essence, was really, it's none of your business, except he didn't say those words. But what he said to Peter was, he said, what is that to you? You follow me. And God brought this verse to my mind, because what I was doing is I was saying, Lord, what about Jim here? You really need to help him in this area of his life. He's just not thinking straight. And it was like Jesus turned to me and said, what is that to you? You follow me. In other words, let's talk about your problem, not Jim's. I can handle him. Let's talk about you. And so I had to decide if I was going to humble myself or not. But anyway, I knew it was a dead-end street not to, so I did. And I prayed that, I said, God, I am sorry. You know, my attitude is one of defensiveness. And please forgive me. And then I went to Jim after we got home and went in his office, and I said, honey, I'm sorry. I was very defensive in my attitude. I didn't say, honey, I was defensive in my attitude, but also you need to apologize too. You know, you were... So you can't do that. You can't do that. You just can only take responsibility for yourself. And so I did. I just said, I'm sorry about my attitude. I was defensive. Will you forgive me? And he says, well, of course I will. And he says, and I didn't handle it right with you either. I was pushy. And I was trying to make you see my point of view on that. So we got everything straightened out. But we had to be vulnerable with each other. We had to be willing to be honest. And then another point in a step toward a good relationship is to be loyal to that person that God's put in your life, that roommate or friend or husband or child. And we're loyal by keeping confidences. If someone shares something with you, it's probably hard enough for them to even share. But then if you do not treat that with respect, then it could devastate the relationship. I mean, that could be the end of a relationship. If another person shares confidential information with you, a need, a hurt in their life, and you do not keep that confidential, nothing, I don't know of anything that can destroy a relationship faster than that sort of thing. Be loyal by not changing your story with someone else or not giving them a different reason than the real one. You know, be willing to be honest with people. And all of those things tell us when we do things like that that we're probably people pleasers and not God pleasers. We're more interested in what people think and what people are going to say than in what God has to say to us and what God wants. Then another step is to pray with and for your friend. And I think this is one of those things that we hear this and we just think, well, naturally, you know, we're supposed to pray about everything. And we kind of just throw it off. And it's so familiar that we just, we don't take it seriously. But Oswald Chambers, in his book, My Utmost for His Highest, one of his readings, he says, you know, we will do anything but come to Jesus. He says, we worry about our problem, we think about it, we run to another person, but he says, we don't come to Jesus. And he says, that's the first thing we should do, is just come to him. And I am amazed how many times in my own life that I try to handle something myself before coming to the Lord. And sometimes I find myself realizing that I've gone for 2 or 3 days just worrying or fretting over a problem, and I have not prayed about it. And no wonder I'm not getting any help. I just assumed God would help me with it. But I haven't come to him, and I haven't asked for his help. And Matthew 18:20 says that, where two or more of you meet in my name, I am there with you. So all I have to do is come and say, Lord, I'm coming in your name. And you may not answer this prayer exactly the way I'd like it answered, but I do want you to answer it in a way that would honor you and that would be for my good in the long run. And to pray with your friend, like I did with my friend Sherry, and then to pray together. There's something about praying together that draws your hearts close. Have you ever noticed that? And sometimes when we get together in prayer meetings, we talk for 50 minutes and spend the last 5 minutes in prayer. We kind of tack prayer onto the end. And one thing that my husband and I have been working on is to learning to pray our prayer requests when we get a group together, instead of everybody spending most of the time sharing them and then tacking 5 minutes of prayer on at the end. We just come and immediately we just start to pray, and each person prays their request, and then the others hear it and they can say they agree with that in their hearts and be praying with you. So, but prayer is so key. Prayer is so necessary. It's the one thing that frightens Satan away. I remember reading several years ago that Mary, Queen of Scots, made a statement about a very godly man, an English man, and she made the statement. She said, I fear the prayers of John Knox more than all the armies of England. And yet we treat prayer so casually. We just say, oh, yes, 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 oh, I'll pray about it. But do we really take it seriously? Pray with and for your friend. And then the fifth thing, the last thing, is to major in gratitude and affirmation when you're building a relationship with another person. Don't forget to be grateful to that person for things. Gratitude is expressing a thankful spirit toward another person for something they do for you. Affirmation is different, because in affirmation, you're drawing attention to a strength in their life. But gratitude is thanking them for something they do for you. So the two are different from each other. I remember one day Sandra helped me on the computer, and to me, you know, I admire her ability to work the computer. So see, I can affirm her by saying, Sandra, I admire your strength in that area, your ability in that area, because I know I don't have any. I'm just learning the computer. But I could say, if I were grateful for the help she gave me that day, then I would say to her, Sandra, thank you. I'm grateful for the help that you gave me that day, and I admire your strength in that area. So I'm being both, I'm showing gratitude, and I'm affirming her. And you don't do these things to flatter another person. You just do them because they're true. Flattery is telling another person something nice about themselves in order to get them to do something for you in return. It's manipulative. But when you affirm another person, you're telling them something in their life that's simply true. It's a strength, and it's something that you genuinely admire. You don't do it to manipulate. You don't do it to make them feel good. You simply do it because it is true. And you may want to encourage them, but you're not flattering them. You're just making an honest statement. So relationships are non-negotiable for the Christian. We don't have a choice. God just says we are to love one another. By that, all men will know that we're his disciples. So they're non-negotiable. And the second thing is that we have to commit ourselves to the process that it takes to build relationships, and that is often difficult to do. And, of course, we live in a throwaway age where if the marriage doesn't work, we'll just throw it away and start over. And God says, we don't work that way. We are committed to one another. We're committed to love with God's kind of love. And it's not easy. It's often very difficult to do. I read an article that's sent out by the chaplain of the U.S. Senate, Richard Halverson. He calls it Perspective. And he used to be our pastor when Jim and I lived in Washington, D.C. several years ago. And this is on relationship, and it's so good that I wanted to just end by reading this to you. And he says, if you're going to fight, fight for the relationship, not against it. Fight for reconciliation, not for alienation. Fight to preserve the friendship, not destroy it. Fight to win your spouse, not lose him or her. Fight to save your marriage, not to cash it in. Fight to solve the problem, not to salve your own ego. If you're going to fight, fight to win, not to lose. Lasting friendships are not negotiated, they are forged. That means heat and pressure. It is commitment to a relationship which sustains it, not pleasant feelings. Treat a relationship as negotiable, and it is easily lost. Consider it non-negotiable, and a way is found to make it work. Authentic intimacy comes only through struggle. And boy, that is so true. Authentic intimacy comes only through struggle. Love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful. It is not arrogant or rude. Love does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrong, but rejoices in the right. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. And boy, when I read a list like this, I know I don't have that kind of love. If I don't learn to yield to God and ask Him to love through me, there's no way I can do that. There's no way that I can be that kind of a person with any capacity on my own part. I've got to have God's love flowing through me. In order to do that, that means I have to keep my sins confessed. I have to keep, like they say in bookkeeping terms, keep short accounts. You know, don't let that ledger go on and on and on, but learn to deal quickly with things and keep the flow in my life clear and clean so that God can work through me. Well, let me just stop right here and just ask if any of you have run into any struggles on relationships, that it's just kind of one of those question marks and you're never quite sure why it doesn't get resolved, and or you're never sure why things are not the same as they used to be with a certain individual, and what you do in those cases, or something that you've learned even in relationships.
maybe the trouble that I have is keeping up with, for example, friends who are not living in the area anymore, and friends from college, and it's really hard to keep up with each other. And once you, you know, haven't talked to them for a while, it just, you know, things just kind of drift away.
Drift apart.
And now it's like, it's kind of hard to even get that.
Yeah. Can you hear back there? Okay, she's saying that when you don't see people and you had close relationships, say in college,
and you miss them, once in a while, it's hard to keep up.
Yeah, you can only deal with your own sin, can't you? You can't deal with another person's sin. And you can only say, I may have been wrong here, and if I offended you, I want you to forgive me. And then they may be. You know, we tend to get hung up on percentages, don't we? We think in our minds, well, all right, I'm 10% wrong, but boy, she's 90. And we get all, you know, we blow it up in our minds. And that's where I think the Lord says, hey, we're not talking about percentages here. Leave her alone. I'll take care of her. Let's talk about your 10%. We don't want to do that because we're so convinced that the other person's the big problem. But God doesn't work in that way. He says, let's handle your problem, and then you let me handle the rest. And yeah. Like you say, pride is usually the thing that keeps us.
I think a lot of times the expectation for the other person, maybe, you know, she or he is older than you in terms of spiritual walk. And you sort of expect the person to handle the situation in a more godly manner. And when you don't see that, you see some disappointment. And I think that's
That's good, Winnie, Do you know, though, I really think this is a missing thing in the Christian body. I think sometimes we're, like Winnie said, we're intimidated by people that are older Christians. And yet I think we need to give each other the right to come and say when things bother us. Because what you think about Hebrews 3:13, it says, exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. And I don't think that verse says, exhort one another, but not any of the older Christians. Leave them alone. Just, you know, the younger ones you can exhort. It doesn't make any difference in that verse. And I think we need to do that. But I think the older Christians have a responsibility to make themselves vulnerable with the younger ones. And one thing that I try to do is, with younger Christians, as I'm getting to know them, I like to, at some point, say to them, if you see something in my life that you think is a blind spot with me, would you please tell me? Because I don't want to be a stumbling block. And I know that I will see myself in a better light than I'm in at times. And unless you feel free to come to me, I may never see it. So I want, as our relationship begins to grow, I like to say that to a person that, hey, if you see anything in my life that you think is a little off balance, I want you to come to me and tell me. But we need to give each other that right to do that. Otherwise, there's a fear that sets in there, and we're afraid to do that with each other. But if we don't learn to do that with each other, there's going to be stunted growth in our lives as Christians. Things will not be as free, and the relationships won't be as close and as meaningful as God intended for them to be. Sometimes, I think sometimes people have unreal expectations too, and the pastor needs to know that he's not going to be able to do everything. I mean, none of us, we all have limited capacities, don't we? So we have to do what God's enabled us to do, and sometimes it needs to be just a clarifying of what different roles are. You know, well, here's why, here's what I can do for you people, and what I can't do, I want to help have others in the church come along and help lift the load and do what I can't do. But none of us are going to be able to fulfill all those roles in the body of Christ. We're limited people. So that's why we need to use each other's gifts to do that. But sometimes people need to be told that by the pastor and his wife and people in leadership roles in the church. They need to be educated as to what's realistic and to how the body works. Otherwise, there can be misunderstanding. Sandra, do you have any thoughts on that? Yeah, Pam or anybody? Winnie, what about you? Yeah, there can be some very difficult situations arise, and often it's through false expectations and just a lack of understanding of what the roles are. Have you ever, in relationship to other people, have you ever had a problem arise and then you go to that person and you get it out in the open and you talk about it and then you forgive each other? You get it all forgiven, but then there's the relationship is not quite the same after that. Have you ever experienced that sort of thing? I've seen this happen, and it's happened to me at times too. And my husband and I were talking about this one day, and he was thinking about it, and he says, you know, I think I know what happens in these kind of situations. In fact, I had him draw this out because I wanted to just share this with you today. It's just a simple little illustration, but you start off with a relationship with a person, and then... I'm sorry. Yeah, we changed that. That's right. We changed. We had it set up, and then we moved it. Oh, thanks. That helps. What did we do before we had this? A little bit fuzzy. Can you see? Think you can make out what it is? Okay. Anyway, you start off with a relationship with this person, and then some problem comes in to where there's some kind of misunderstanding or strain between you. And then when that happens, then you confess it to each other. And then you think, and then when you confess it, then you work toward forgiveness with each other. And then after you forgive each other, you think, well, why couldn't we just forget the problem and go on? But you find it coming back. And you find yourself still feeling badly about the situation because it doesn't work like this. You don't go from relationship, bad relationship, to confession, forgiveness, and forgetting. It doesn't work that way. When you have confessed it and you've forgiven each other, then both of you have to immediately work on a new relationship with each other. And that means that you go out of your way to affirm that person, that the relationship, that you want the relationship and that you want it to be a good, close one. And then as you're both working toward a new relationship, then in time, you're both able to forget the problem that you previously had. But it takes, you don't just assume that this is going to happen because it doesn't go in that order, but you have to aggressively work toward a new relationship. That's why when a parent has to spank a child or discipline a child, you shouldn't just discipline them and then go on with your housework or dinner, but you need to, after you've disciplined the child, you don't apologize for disciplining him, but then you take him in your lap and you let them know that I love you, even though you did something wrong. And God does that with us, doesn't he? He, in a sense, he will discipline us, but then he affirms us of his love. He's working toward a new relationship with us again. And that helped us to think about it in that way, that that we need to, and Jim has found this in counseling with people too, that someone will maybe tell him a problem and they'll work on it together. But then the next time that he sees that person, if he has not worked in some way affirming them, maybe the next time he's around them, they feel, oh, like maybe I told him too much, or maybe I shouldn't have told him that, shouldn't have said that. And so he says he feels a responsibility after someone has shared something sensitive with him to make a point through a phone call or dropping by to see that person to let them know, hey, I really love you, and this problem in no way puts any strain on our relationship. I want you to know you're important to me and I care about you. So he says he feels that he has to go out of his way to affirm that person so that they don't feel weird around him the next time they're with him. And I really think that is key in relationships, is to be able to take that extra step toward the person.
Jerry, she had that question about how do you maintain, I think Celia did, the questions about how do you keep up relationships with old friends.
Uh-huh. We never really answered that, did we? Sorry.
I was thinking that, sometimes you really can't a lot of times. And I know people that I knew in college now, maybe three years ago, for four girls, three of the girls and myself, we got together after 30 years, and you just kind of catch up. But you really, there's only a certain number of intimate relationships or real close relationships that you can continue. It's going to take work. And if you're developing relationships where you are, some of those others you're going to have to just both understand we just can't. We've got to let them go.
Yeah.
And you're humanly limited. Apart from a Christmas letter, a lot of people just send letters at Christmas, and that's sufficient to let that go. Mm-hmm. There is an excellent book that we ought to read, all of us, called Friendships of Women, by Dee, and I believe her last name is Resident, or it starts with a D. You might have to get it by the title.
Friendships with Women?
Friendships of Women.
Friendships of Women.
Uh-huh. Okay. It's really good because it explains how, as little girls, how our feelings and how we think and how little girls are real cruel to each other.
Very competitive,
very
yes.
And how we grow up and we don't grow out of that. Uh-huh. And it just really, it's a real helpful book just in dealing with our friendships.
Good. Thanks, Sandra. That's great. We have found over the years that there's some people that we go years and years and years and don't see. Sometimes, like you say, 15, 20 years. And then we get together, but there's still a heart bond there. It's kind of like we just pick up where we left off, and we sit down, and it's so much fun to be together. We were with Jim and Joyce Walker last night for dinner, and it was so exciting because we haven't seen them for years. But we had dinner together after all these years and just had a great time. And they're just such a free flow of conversation, and our hearts were just bonded together. And I thought, that makes such a difference when Christ is in your life, in the center of your life, that your relationships, like I've heard my husband say, are not on the basis of decreasing returns, but increasing returns in Christ. When it's a healthy relationship, that time and distance don't determine the quality of it. And that's such a blessing to me, because it is frustrating. There's some people you'd like to see, and you just can't see them. But thank God for the relationship. Okay, well, I think Pam?
This is kind of covered previously. I hope I'm not repetitive, but one of the difficulties I've found just a few times is where there's an expectation. In my situation, it was where someone lived far away. And I really didn't, I'd only begun to know the person, but they wanted the relationship to be closer and more intimate. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to know the person, but the location of where they lived, the distance, various things was kind of made it difficult. But I sense that there's an expectation there to make the relationship much deeper. And in a way, premature.
Yes.
I was not against developing the relationship, but it seemed a little premature. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I have trouble. There's been a few times that's happened in the past 10 years that I feel apologetic, but though I might make a phone call or write a note, actually there's not a lot more that I could do.
That's right.
Do you have any suggestions for that? You feel like you've hurt someone's feelings, or
Does anyone else want to say something?
I have that experience. Yes, I was just thinking about that with another, where things, I got to know this one person, and things were beginning to grow. There was a friendship developing. Mm-hmm. But then as soon as she placed her expectation or demand that she would like to see this grow into something mm-hmm. deeper and something more meaningful, I just mm-hmm. repelled from that. I just mm-hmm. kind of withdrew a little mm-hmm. bit. And I don't know why that happens. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can explain that.
Did you sense that she was looking too much for you to meet needs in her life? Was it?
Maybe. And then I found later that it put me in a position of maybe obligation. Mm-hmm. There were some feelings of guilt for not mm-hmm. fulfilling that mm-hmm. need that she might have. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was also premature for her or mm-hmm. not a real thoughtful thing to do to place that demand. Mm. I'm finding that relationships need time to develop, over time, and not have to place that expectation mm-hmm. initially or in the beginning stages of mm-hmm. the friendship.
Yeah. Do the rest of you, have you found that? We have to be careful in relationships that we don't insist that people meet needs in our lives. But There have been times in my life where I have longed for a close friend, and where I've lived, God didn't answer that prayer. And I thought, Lord, why don't you give me a close friend? I really need someone. And I finally figured out that what God was doing was saying, I want to meet those needs in your life. I don't want you to be overly dependent on other people. And so it was like God was allowing me to go through a period of loneliness in order that I might learn to let him be a better friend to me. My tendency was to run to people to meet that need, but God was trying to wean me off of unhealthy relationships, off of needing other people too much. And so that was what I needed, and that's why he didn't answer that prayer.